Daniel chapter 3, verse 1. Daniel 3, verse 1, I guess, get a bookmark. We'll come back a couple times here. I showed him what page in his Bible today. So Daniel 3, verse 1. It says, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 80 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, the governors and captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then an herald cried aloud, To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And therefore at that time when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, and all the people that the nations and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth that, he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now you know the story. It's real familiar. I'll just say the last couple weeks, spent a little bit of time here in the chapter, and I'll point out a few things that have kind of stood out to me. Obviously, won't cover everything in the chapter. Just a few things, like I said, that had stood out to me. Maybe some things I noticed that I hadn't noticed before. But we ended in verse 12 on purpose. So like I said, you know the rest of the story already. But it says in verse 12, there are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. So you know the story, they made this law. Almost looks like this law is kind of made on a whim. You know, basically here's this law that just comes up. And basically what it amounts to is everybody when you hear music, everybody in the world, when you hear music, I want you to violate the first commandment and keep this law, which we just kind of, you know, hastily passed on a whim is what it looks like to me. But the law is you hear the music, you know, he keeps going over it, you know, the psaltery, the sackbut, dulcimer, flute, cornet, got the order screwed up, but you get the idea. You hear music, you fall down and you worship this image when you hear it. And what happens? Well, here come these certain Chaldeans. They come, they say, Nebuchadnezzar, you made this law that whenever you hear music, everybody's got to fall down and worship it, right? You know the story. He says, there's certain Jews, Nebuchadnezzar, when they hear the music, they don't fall down and worship the image, right? And the verse convicted me, verse 12, when I read it. It says, there are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. See what it is? Like, what convicted me is, well, there are certain Jews that aren't doing it. Why is it only certain Jews that aren't doing it? How many Jews are living in Babylon? It's not just Babylon, it's the entire empire. There's Jews everywhere. How many Jews know the first commandment? Probably most of them. And, you know, captivity's not been going on too long yet. I mean, they still should know at least a couple of the Ten Commandments. You know, what's the Ten Commandments? Thou shalt worship no other god. I don't know, something about your mom and dad, murder, adultery, you know, they got that much down. And here's this new law. You hear music, you fall down and worship this image. I think every Jew on the planet probably at this point still in history probably knows, yeah, we don't worship images. But still, they hear the music. All of the Jews in the world, except for three, fall down and worship this thing. To me, that was convicting. Why is it only certain Jews? I mean, it should read, you know,
None of the Jews, they should be saying, Nebuchadnezzar, none of the Jews fall down and worship this thing. But the fact is, most of them are. You know, to me, that's a sad state of affairs, man. And I've told you before, the reason we named our boy Daniel is because of Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, where it says, what Daniel purposed in his heart, he would not defile himself, right? And to me, I always, when it hit me, that verse was right before he got here. But what it is but Daniel. And I tell you, Daniel means God is my judge. And what it is, you know, Daniel knows God is my judge. But Daniel purposed in his heart. I don't care what the Babylonians think. I don't care what the Babylonians do. I don't care what they say when the Persians get here. I don't care what they think, what they say, what they do. I don't even care what the rest of these apostate Jews think or say about it. I'm going to do right. That's why I named it. I want you to do what you think is right, what God would have you do, despite what everybody else in the world is doing. And that's this. But see, you know, certain Jews won't do it. And it's a bad, like I said, it's a sad state of affairs. Why does it say none of the Jews would fall down and worship? And you probably get why. I mean, there's a very obvious threat to your life. You worship this thing or we kill you. And maybe that's a good excuse. I don't think it is a good excuse, but it's probably a good enough excuse for most people. And I'm sure there's this. You know, certain Jews won't fall down. I'm sure there's certain Jews, probably most Jews, fall down and just lay on their face. I don't know what they do. I don't know if they go, oh, or whatever they do. They're just laying in the dirt, oh, and thinking about, yeah, tonight I got to stop at the Walmart and pick up some milk and eggs. And none of them are really worshiping this, but they're going through the motions of worshiping it. You know, and I'll just tell you, all the Chaldeans aren't even worshiping this thing. So if the music goes off, here's the law. You hear music, you fall down, you worship this image, right? Here come these certain Chaldeans, it says. They say, hey, Nebuchadnezzar, you played the music, and these three guys didn't worship. Well, how do you know they're not worshiping? You're supposed to be laying on your face worshiping this thing. So I'm sure there's a lot of Jews doing it, just going through the motions. Oh, yeah, I'll bow down, and yeah, I'll say a little incantation, whatever it is we do. But, you know, but not everybody is, like I said, truly bowing worshiping. But the problem is only three of them look at it and say, you know what, that guy, and that guy, they're not doing it. It's only obvious that three people aren't worshiping it. It's certain that the Jews won't bow. Like I said, certain of them amounts to three. Like I said, maybe it's a good excuse, but then here's this. Why is it only certain Christians go to church? I mean, faithfully go to church. Why is it only certain Christians read their Bible? Only certain Christians pray? Only certain Christians give money, hand out tracts, do any kind of witnessing? Only a certain, you know, just a real small certain group of Christians are peculiar people, zealous of good works, and on it goes. At least in Babylon, you can say, you know what, it's only certain Jews because most of them are afraid for their life. That ain't true here today. Is there a danger to most Christians' life here today? Is someone going to cut your head off if you read your Bible? Not yet, they're not. What if you pray? Hand out a tract. Go to church. Whatever. Nobody's going to do nothing to you except what an idiot. So like I said, I mean, to me, that was a conviction. Yeah, it's only certain Christians that are doing what needs to be done today. That's too bad. You know, nobody's life's in danger yet. And to me, it's sad, and I think it's convicting. You know, the Bible says that the devil is the accuser of the brethren. And that you kind of see it here. These certain Chaldeans come and say, Nebuchadnezzar, these certain Jews aren't doing what you said. And I think, I notice what happens. The devil is the accuser of the brethren. And I think he goes, and it's kind of the opposite side of the coin. You know what? It's only certain people that are doing what you want. Ha 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 type of deal. Like, all those people know better. Every one of them just as saved as the other one, but only a tiny little bit of those people will do something for you like you ask them to. I said, it's too sad. It's very sad. And there are certain Jews whom now has set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, and there he names them. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Someone's missing, by the way. I tell you, Daniel's got a little picture Bible, and we started off, you know, kind of, here's what we're going to talk about today. Here's four guys sitting around the table saying, no, we don't want the roast beef. That's what it looks like. The guy's bringing roast beef. Oh, we don't want roast beef. There's four of them say, we don't want the roast beef. All of a sudden, you got three. What happened? I mean, somebody's missing here. How come nobody comes up and says, hey, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar is not bowing either? Nobody says that. You know what I get from that? I think Daniel's bowing somewhere. I'll just tell you, look at this. Look at Daniel chapter 3. It's everybody's there. It's then the princes, the governors and captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together.
unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. They're all standing. What are they all doing? The music starts. I'll just tell you, Daniel's, he's an important man in the kingdom. Chapter 2, verse 48. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and the chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. So if all the big shots are there, guess who's there with them? How come nobody says, hey, wait a second, Belshazzar, he's not falling down. I really think he is falling down. Here's the Bible. It says, just man falleth seven times and rises up again, right? What does the Bible say? Every man in his best state's what? All together, that's me, that's your sainted grandfather, that's Moses, and that's Daniel, right? Fill in the blank, that's him. Now look at Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2, verse 48. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole provinces of Babylon and chief of the governors and over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So he asked before, a couple years earlier, he says, hey king, I think you ought to promote my buddies. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the four of us got together, had a prayer meeting. That's how we were able to come up with the interpretation of your dream. He doesn't speak up for his buddies here anymore. You know what happened? Number one, I think Daniel's bowing. And number two, I'll just tell you, this is the second time in the book of Daniel that Daniel's been guilty of idolatry. Verse 46 of chapter 2, it says, then the king Nebuchadnezzar, you know, after Daniel interprets a dream for him, then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. So he says, I'll tell you what that dream he had was, and I'll tell you what it means, right? He does, and Nebuchadnezzar's like, wow, that's really fire. What does Nebuchadnezzar do? And you can't miss it. Then Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel. You don't read anywhere Daniel says, oh, no, don't worship me. I told you, God's going to give me the interpretation. It's God that did this. He didn't say anything like that. He says, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, get up. I'm just a man just like you are. He doesn't say anything like it. Remember one time you read about that people think Barnabas is Jupiter and they think Paul is Mercury. And as soon as they realize what's going on, it's, oh, no, you got it all wrong. We're just preachers. You know, and then he starts telling about the real God. We're not gods at all. Actually, as a matter of fact, those guys you're talking about, they ain't even gods. There's one God, you know, and then Daniel doesn't do that. And I don't know why. You know, Paul and Barnabas, they say, hey, we're not Jupiter and Mercury. Those guys are make fairy tales anyways, that they want to kill them all of a sudden, when they say it. Maybe that's what he's worried. I don't know. And I think of this, you know, to me, maybe it's kind of sweet, by the way. I mean, here's young man Daniel. They drag him out of his homeland. They make a eunuch out of him. And all of a sudden, it's, here's the guy that dragged out of my homeland and killed my family and sacked my city and made me a eunuch. And now here he is laying in the dirt in front of me. Maybe it's that. I don't know why, but he doesn't stop him. You know, so I read Daniel's guilty of idolatry in chapter 2, and I think he's probably guilty of idolatry in chapter 3. I do know this. I know this for a fact. The second time you do something, it's easier than the first time you did it. The third time you commit a sin is easier than the second time. It just gets kind of easier as you go. So I think you're guilty of idolatry once. I've already done it once before, you know. That's kind of how it goes. Doing wrong is easier. The more you do it, the easier it gets. That's just kind of how we are. Incidentally, I'll just tell you this. Daniel chapter 2, if you believe the dates, is 603 B.C. And Daniel chapter 2 ends with Nebuchadnezzar laying in the dirt in front of Daniel worshiping him. Daniel chapter 3 happens in 580 B.C. Nebuchadnezzar sets up this image. He says, you play the music, you fall down, you worship it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego don't fall down. You know the story. Daniel never speaks up and says anything about it. That's 580 B.C. And like I said, no one accuses Daniel. All the big shots are there. Nobody says, hey, that Belshazzar guy, he didn't worship. Like I said, I think he's laying in the dirt with everybody else. And then Daniel chapter 4 is in 570 B.C. Daniel kind of reemerges in Daniel chapter 4 to interpret Nebuchadnezzar's dream. You say, so what? So what is there's 23 years between Daniel chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 4. You know, Daniel's guilty of a little bit of idolatry. I think God puts him on the shelf for a little bit. You know, it's worth thinking. You know, Paul worried about being a castaway. I don't think I would have thrown him away forever, but I do know this. He wasted 2 years in prison. As far as I can tell, Daniel's kind of sitting on his shelf for 23 years. You know, what if God to say, no, I'm going to shelve you for, you know, 20, 15, whatever many years it might be. Some of you don't got 15, 23 years left in you. You know, but anyways, you know, and, you know, by the way, how does the New Testament define idolatry? Covetousness is idolatry in the New Testament. And that's, to me, reading about Daniel guilty of idolatry and putting on a shelf for 23 years ought to be a good warning for the typical modern American. God said, that guy guilty of idolatry, I'm going to shelve him for a while. And I'll just tell you, how long is Daniel in captivity? 70 years. It looks like a third of that is, you know, kind of wasted. But anyways, even if you don't want to believe Daniel's guilty of idolatry in chapter 3, I think he probably is. He is in chapter 2. And he doesn't speak up to save his buddies in chapter 3. Like I said, in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar falls down. He doesn't say chapter 3, chapter 2. He never says, hey, you know, you think Daniel in chapter 3 would say, hey, Nebuchadnezzar, these guys can't worship you. Come on, you're just a guy like everybody else. Hey, yeah, you're the king of kings, but you're still just a guy. You know, and Nebuchadnezzar, what would he say? Well, hey, wait a second. A couple years ago, I fell down in the dirt worship. You'd have nothing to say about it. Kind of how the way it is. It's harder to preach against some things that you're guilty of, isn't it? To me, amen, that's a good warning. You know, want to tell your kids, you know, not to do something, well, you don't do it. You want to tell neighbor this is wrong, well, you know, and don't do it. What's everybody's big complaint? Why don't they come to church? What's the problem? It's all the hypocrites at the church, right? And that's you know, I think that's where Daniel's at. It's harder to preach against something when everybody knows that just a couple years ago, everybody watched the king fall down and worship you. So anyways, look at Daniel 3 here again. Daniel chapter 3, verse 10. So thou, O king, has made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. So the law goes out. I'm sure Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego know all about the law. They don't make a big stink about it. They don't decide, you know, we're going to overthrow the government. They don't do any of this kind of stuff. But the music goes off. You know, by the way, when they went into captivity, you know, Jeremiah, the last prophet for the captivity, what does he tell everybody to do? He said, you just need to submit to the king of Babylon. And they do submit to the king of Babylon. But here, submitting to the king of Babylon means violating the first and great commandment. They won't do it. Like I said, they don't make any kind of big stink. They don't stomp their feet and call and talk radio, write letters. They just, when the music goes off, what do? They just don't do it. You know, music goes off. You know, like we saw, where is it, chapter 3, I forget the verse. They're all standing around. Yeah. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar, verse 3, had set up. There's all the big shots. Everybody's standing there. Everybody's standing. Music goes off. What's everybody doing? All of a sudden, everybody's laying in the dirt. You know, to me, you know all Nebuchadnezzar does, or Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego do? They just stand. That's a big deal. You know, God makes a big deal of you just standing. And then he's chapter 13. Nebuchadnezzar gives him a chance. Then Nebuchadnezzar in his rage and fury commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar and spake unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made. Well, but if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God shall that deliver you out of my hands? So he's mad. I mean, he is a king of kings. You know, Daniel chapter 2, you know, the image, he is the head of gold. I mean, if there's ever an absolute monarch, it's him. And I read it. When I read out loud, I didn't. But Nebuchadnezzar in his rage and fury, I picture him yelling and slobbering all. Maybe he's not, I don't know. But he's angry. And he says, look, you either do this thing I tell you, or you're dead meat, bud. And they know, you know what, if he says it, it's true. And he's mad. Here's what amounts to. Are you going to fall or aren't you? And like I said, many, many times, God thinks it's a big deal for you to just stand and hold your ground. And that's, you know, what's the purpose of the whole armor of God anyways? So that you may be able to stand. Scott's, I got a shield, I got a helmet, I got shoes, I got a breastplate, all this stuff is just so you can just stand. It is a big deal to God if you just do that, and that's what they do. The whole world says, fall down. And they said, no, we're just going to stand. God wants us to stand. We're going to stand. And I'll just tell you as it goes. I'll tell you, you know, Daniel's got his little picture Bible. We were sitting there looking today. And look, here's four guys sitting around a table. And there's a waiter at roast beef. And they said, oh, no, we don't want roast beef. You know, that's, it's a, whatever it was. I don't know what it was. But anyways, but they take a stand in chapter one. A little stand. They say, you know, we ain't going to eat the king's meat. You know, we'd rather, we have this dietary law, and we'd just rather keep it. And hey, sorry, we'll make a deal. How about we do it for 10 days and see how it turns out, right? It wasn't a big deal, but it was something, I guess. And you know what that does in chapter one? I think that little stand helps him get ready for a bigger stand a couple years later. Take a little stand and help you make a bigger, I think that's kind of how it works. Look at Luke 23. We pointed this out before, but it's kind of the same idea. Look at Luke 23, look at verse 50. Behold, Luke 23:50. Behold, there was a man named Joseph, a counselor, and he was a good man and a just. He says in parentheses here, the same had not consented to the counsel and deed of them. He was Arimathea, a city of the Jews, who also himself waited for the kingdom of God. So now here what's happening is Joseph's going to go and ask for the body of Jesus Christ. Mark tells you he goes in and boldly requests Pilate for his body. He makes this bold stand for Jesus. You know, he was kind of in the closet, like this secret disciple, and all of a sudden he comes out and says, you know what? I am a disciple of Jesus Christ. You just condemned him and killed him as a criminal. I'm asking you to give him his body. I'm going to bury him in my tomb, right? So it's this bold stand he takes. But earlier, the same had not consented to the counsel and deeds of them. You know, they're plotting. You know, we got the Howard meetings going like, yeah, we could do this and kill this Jesus guy. And Joseph Arimathea says, I don't think this is lawful. And they say, what, are you one of his disciples too? And he kind of shuts up about it. And he takes his little stand, he consented not, meaning, I don't think we should do this. Kind of takes a little timid stand, and a little bit later, he takes this much bolder stand. You know, consented not, just mentioned this morning, learn to say no, it'll do you better to learn to speak Greek and Hebrew. That's how he starts, say no. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, no, we don't want to eat the portion of the king's meat. A little bit later, it's a bigger deal. No, we won't fall down. No, we won't fall down. Even if you're mad and going to throw us in the furnace, we're not going to do it. And from reading Daniel chapter 1, I'll just tell you, I always get the impression from Daniel chapter 1 that Daniel's kind of the ringleader. The Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they all get with Daniel's program. I think he kind of helps them along and leads them along. They have a prayer meeting. Daniel gets this idea. He hears that they're going to kill all the wise men of Babylon. That'd be the four of them. And he says, come on, guys, let's go back to my house. We'll have a prayer meeting. I always get the impression he's the leader. And to me, it's like, well, maybe you ought to help somebody start off and take a little stand and help them grow up a little bit. And then, you know, give it a few years and you might be surprised how somebody turns out. You know, but before moving on, we should say this. What were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? They're eunuchs. You know, the point being is, you know, they were gelded, you know, whatever word you want, you know, castrated. And probably before they filled out. You know, they're, you know, kids. You know, point being is, they weren't the biggest, baddest, buffest dudes in the kingdom. And, the enemy, and you get the idea, and you say, yeah, so what? So what is, you don't have to be super big and bad and buff and everything else to take a stand. Here's these kids, they like I said, they're castrated before they fill out, and they still say, you don't know, we're not going to do it. I don't know why I keep thinking this last couple weeks. A long time ago, I gave this try. This guy used to always go like this to me. He'd always like this devil sign. I forget what he'd say, like rock and roll or whatever. I forget what he'd say. But he'd do that, and I brought him to Chick Track about the kids that jump in the water, and they get all bit by snakes, and that's about it. You know, the whole world's been bit by a snake. It's kind of the gist of it. This guy was big. He kind of reminded, he never had a shirt that fit because all his arms were like giant. I gave him this track, you know, hey, read this, you know, your rock and roll. I forget how the conversation went. Next time I come in to see him, he didn't say anything to me, but his boss comes, hey, did you give this guy a comic book? I'm like, brute. And his feelings are all hurt, you know. He didn't even tell me anything about it. You know, but I didn't mean to get on that. I don't know why I keep thinking about this dude. Like the last couple weeks, it keeps coming up. You know, history has you know, men that were great martyrs. And you know what else history has? History has little boys that were great martyrs. History has old men, old women, young girls. You know, point being is, you don't have to be big and bad. Just say, you know, no, I'm not going to do it. Yell and foment and threaten, I'm just going to stand here. I'm not making a big scene. I'm just saying, no, I won't go along. You know, if these, you know, emasculated boys could take a bold, dangerous stand, I think you can take a bold, dangerous stand. You know, so Daniel chapter 3, look at verse 13. We just read it. Nebuchadnezzar's mad. It said, then Nebuchadnezzar in his rage and fury commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. And then it says in verse 19, then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded they should heat the furnace 17 times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Slew those men. What men is it talking about? Talking about the mightiest men from Nebuchadnezzar's army. Nebuchadnezzar's mad. He's fomenting, you know, and he says, you get those guys and you heat that furnace up and you throw them in and you kill them. I'll just tell you, I don't think he intends on killing the mightiest men in his army. But he does. It's a good warning. You ever get mad and lose your cool and, you know, it might cost you more than you want it. You know, Proverbs says a lot about, you know, losing your temper. You gotta really be careful. Don't get mad and you might hurt somebody you don't intend on hurting. It's kind of, you know, we won't turn here for time's sake. Remember 2 Samuel 11? Everybody kind of forgets that Uriah the Hittite is killed, right? And these other guys are killed with him. You always ought to look. You know, David had one target. I want to hurt that guy. I want to hurt Uriah the Hittite, and I forget how many other men get killed with him. That's kind of what happens here. I mean, different motive, but still. You ought to be careful. Look at Daniel chapter 3. Look at verse 23. When it says here, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonied and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and so forth, but see that in verse 25? He said, did we throw three guys in there? He said, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Who does Nebuchadnezzar see in the furnace? He counts noses. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Who's this fourth guy? He said, man, he looks like the Son of God. Here's what I want you to get out of this. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego go through a fiery trial so that somebody else could see the Lord. You know, we have this notion of, and we know all things work together for good, right? You think something happens to you, well, it's for my good. It isn't always for your good. You know, maybe it's for somebody else's good. So you ought to remember, you know, all things work together. You ought to remember, you know, you're going through a trial and you might not like it, but it might be good for somebody else. Somebody else might get a chance to see the Lord because the way you go through your fiery trial. And so you ought to, you know, just like Nebuchadnezzar, you need to be careful when you get angry. You need to be careful when you're going through a fiery trial. Because this might be someone's big chance to see the Lord by watching you go through something. You know, I suspect, well, you know, Cyrus and Nebuchadnezzar, I think both of those, I think they're probably in heaven. You know, I don't know. I think that way. Nebuchadnezzar, he's a type of the Antichrist, but Solomon's a type of the Antichrist. You know, so both of them, you can kind of convince me either way where they end up when they die. If you say he's not, I need to study it out. He had some verse to show me, but I think Nebuchadnezzar is probably in heaven. That's just my feeling on it. And, I'll just tell you, Nebuchadnezzar saw the Lord here in Daniel chapter 3. You know, I meant to mention too. Yeah, I should mention before we move on about the trial. Remember Saul and Paul and Silas in Acts chapter 16. Remember they're in the stocks and bonds, and it says, and the prisoners heard them. Something to remember. They do hear you when you go through. But anyways, didn't need to back up and get into that. But so anyways, Nebuchadnezzar, though, he sees Jesus Christ there in the burning fiery furnace. And he sees the Lord. Who does he say? He says, hey, come out. Who does he say, hey, come out to? Hey, Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, why don't you come out? He never says the Lord right there to come out. You know, but I'll tell you, you know, God does deal with people. Most people don't get saved the first chance they get at getting saved. Keep mentioning the last few weeks here about, you know, Jonah. It says the word of the Lord came unto Jonah the second time, and that's a good verse. And I keep mentioning it because it's still just as good. I mean, the word of the Lord came to you probably more than once or twice before you finally got saved. It probably came to you more than once or twice about whatever some certain thing you needed to get right about, but God is real good. And God kept dealing with him, and I think God, you know, he deals with Nebuchadnezzar for a little bit here. It says, verse 26, you just read it. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth in the midst of the fire. I guess the Lord stays in there. But look at chapter 3, look at verse 14. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do you not serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? So he's saying, you don't worship my gods? And they say, no, that is your God. That's basically what they tell them in verse 18. Be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. He said, you worship my gods? He said, no, they're your gods. And that's what they tell them. They said in verse 17, if it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. See, you serve my God? They say, no, it's your God. We'll serve our God. Right? They get it. They will not worship or serve any God except for their own. As that's Nebuchadnezzar's testimony of them at the end. So you get it in chapter 28 and 29, Nebuchadnezzar says, then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. So he tells them, they're only going to worship their God. See, it's still, he sees Jesus Christ there in a furnace with him. He still says, that's their God. You see that? Verse 29, therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. So he said, if you say anything bad about their God, but still it's their God, I'll cut you in pieces. But still he says, for there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. See, maybe he's coming around. He's not there yet. He's, man, these guys, their God is like nobody else's God, but it's still their God. You know, so hopefully you get that. He's not laying any claim to him as of yet. Like I said, God, I think God is dealing with Nebuchadnezzar. And I want to think that eventually, you know, God gets through to him. Incidentally, who wrote Daniel chapter 4? Nebuchadnezzar writes Daniel chapter 4. It says, Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought towards me. So see, you know, maybe God gets through to him. And Nebuchadnezzar, I'll just tell you, Nebuchadnezzar's kind of got a bad habit, as of yet, of getting messages kind of confused. Daniel chapter 2, I think there's a message for Nebuchadnezzar. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar has this dream of this image, a head of gold, you know, chest and arms of silver, you know, and it goes down to the brass and iron and the toes and all this stuff. What the message, like I said, it is a real message for Nebuchadnezzar. What it amounts to is this, Babylon and you, the head of gold, you might be a head of gold, but you ain't going to last that long. Babylon really doesn't last long at all. And the kingdom of this world, by the way, they just keep getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. You know, Nebuchadnezzar, by the way, his name means may Nebo protect the crown. Nebo is one of their Babylonian gods. So the guy's name is, you know, may God keep him as king. You know, the English say, God, what do they say? God bless the king, may the king, what do they say? Oh, God save the king. Yeah, that's what they say. But it's kind of the same idea. You know, God tells him in Daniel chapter 2, Nebo ain't going to protect the crown. This kingdom you got is as fancy as it is right now. It ain't gonna be here too much longer. By the way, I was just telling them when we were eating lunch the other day, I like the Persians had a big problem with the Babylonians. The Persians take over the Babylonians, and to become king, part of their coronation is the king of Babylon goes and takes the hand of this statue named Marduk. And I forget, they have a word for it. But basically, you become king when you take the hands of this statue. And the Persians got fed up with the Babylonians. They marched in, took the statue home, and melted it down. They're good. Now you can't have another king. You know, but anyways, you know, God's message to Daniel or Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 2 is, yeah, your kingdom ain't going to be here. It's pretty cool now, but for not for long. The next one's going to be less cool. The next one even less cooler, and, you know, and so on and so forth. And then this big rock comes flying out of nothing. What, you know, the big rock is Jesus Christ. Smacks it in the feet and the head and the torso and the arms and the legs and the toes. It all blows. It all, it's all equal in the end. It all blows away like chaff. Head of gold, just like the feet of iron and clay. You know, in the end, one's just as worthless as the other. And then God tells Daniel, God will give you the interpretation of the dream. Who does Nebuchadnezzar end up worshiping in Daniel chapter 2? He worships Daniel. You know, see, Nebuchadnezzar gets his wires crossed, you know, quite a bit. Daniel chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar, he gets his dream of an image. And the next chapter, what's he doing? He's like, oh, an image, huh? And Daniel gives the interpretation of it. I guess I will build a bit. He gets things wrong all the time. Daniel chapter 4, you know, we didn't read it, but Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. Daniel interprets it, and Daniel says, yeah, God wants you to know you better not get too big for your britches. And in Daniel chapter 4, what does Nebuchadnezzar do? He says, so I got too big for my britches. It's all in the Hebrew. That's how he says it. But anyways. And so Daniel chapter 3, he sees the Lord in chapter 25. He answered and said, lo, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth at the midst of the fire. Like I said, it's you three come out. And I'll just tell you something, by the way. He ends up saying, wow, there's no God like that God can save you from the fire. Here he says, you know, that the fourth is like the Son of God. You know, the other Bibles want to make Nebuchadnezzar worse than he is. In the other Bibles, he said, he is like a son of the gods. You know, Nebuchadnezzar is figuring out more than I think you want to think that he is here. But still, he's still saying, you can just stay there for now. And so then verse 28, he says, wow, there's no God like that God that can save somebody from the fire. That's really a testimony. Then verse 28, it looks good. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own god. And it's therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other god that can deliver after this sort. So it sounds real good. But the problem is this. He says, don't say anything bad about the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The problem is their names aren't really Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The problem is their names is Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Hananiah means Jehovah is gracious. Mishael means who is like God. And Azariah means Jehovah is my helper. And everybody in Babylon calls them Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Nebuchadnezzar gets up and says, there's no God like the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. When he lifts up the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, it's kind of confusing. You might not get confused. You read it in 2017 in America, it doesn't confuse you. You know who he's talking about. Imagine if you're a Babylonian who speaks Babylonian. And Nebuchadnezzar says, you know, the God of Shadrach, you know, the commander of the moon God. That's what Shadrach means. And Meshach is, who is like Aku? And there's no, you know, who else is, what other god is like, you know, that's what I mean. Abednego is the servant of Mego. So all three of these guys had a name that had something to do with the real God of the Bible. Then they changed it to a name that has something to do with some false god out of Babylon. So he says, when he reads it, therefore I make a decree that if you spoke Babylonian, this, you'd hear it kind of like this. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language would speak anything amiss against the God of the command of the moon god, or who is like a coup, or the god of the servant of Mego. See, all of a sudden, how if you're a Babylonian, you hear that, you get confused. You know, it's kind of, you know, Kind of funny, you change the wording of something and the meaning gets all kind of twisted, but you know, anyways, we'll make a big stink of that. You know, 2 Kings 5 all over again. Remember 2 Kings chapter 5? Who's the guy's name with the leprosy? Naaman the Syrian. And Naaman the Syrian's got, you know, he's got leprosy and he's got this little Jewish girl living in his house who's asleep. You know, there's a prophet in Israel, she says. And just lost his name again. Naaman, what does Naaman the Syrian do? He packs up and he goes and knocks on the door of the king. He goes, hey king, I heard you know, that's kind of the heathen for you. You give him a good witness, a good testimony, you know, a good Bible verse. Don't be surprised when they get it all twisted. You know, point being is, you know, you give it to him and you probably have to give it to him. You know, the word of the Lord came into Jonah, what, the second time? You know, God gave it to you more than once. I think you ought to have patience and try to give it to somebody more than once or twice. You know, and then the other thing is, don't be surprised when you meet somebody that's been all twisted by something somebody said, you know, somewhere along the line. Anyways, you know, to me, it's, he's getting it. He doesn't got it yet. I think eventually, like I said, my own feeling is I think Nebuchadnezzar probably eventually gets it. He's not there yet. Somebody's going to have to still deal, and God still deals with him. So before, if God's willing to still deal with him, you ought to still be willing to deal with him. So, but you know, it's been a few months now, we talked about Noah, you know, God put up with everything for, he said, 120 years. Guess what? If God is willing to put up with it for 120 years, Noah had to put up with it for 120 years. And I think here, if God's still willing to deal with Nebuchadnezzar and say, hey, you're not there yet, then you ought to be able to deal with him and say, yeah, you're not there yet. You know, but anyways, like I said, don't be surprised when you think, man, I couldn't have gave it to you any more clearly than that. And he's like, oh, you know, that's kind of the heathen for you. That's kind of some of the new converts for you. You know, just be patient. You didn't get it the first day either. So anyways, you know, here, I'll close with this. There's more in the chapter, obviously. That's what I close with, and this is, I guess, what I want you to think about. What does the Bible say about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego after Daniel chapter 3? Or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. I think that's what God calls them. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But anyways, what does the Bible say about these three after Daniel chapter 3? The Bible says nothing. The number one I get from that is, well, they didn't do it for recognition. Like I said, they say, when you hear the music, fall down in the dirt and worship. They don't make a big stink. They just quietly take their stand. And that's all you got to do is just quietly try to mind your own business and, you know, trouble finds you. You know, the other thing is God knows what they did. God obviously remembers it. And here's the most important thing I want you to get is what I want you to think about. What if there's only going to be one or two things that anybody ever remembers about you? What do you know about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Well, they wouldn't eat the king's roast beef and they wouldn't fall down and worship the statue. You know, chances are, you'll come and go, and maybe somebody remember one or two things about you. Everybody remember doubting Thomas? The Bible says more than one thing about Thomas. What does everybody remember? Well, just one thing. He said, I won't believe. It's been a while. We did devotions with the kids. We're talking about Simon the leper. I don't think Simon's got leprosy anymore. When you read about, everybody still says, oh yeah, that's Simon. He's, no, I'm not a leper. Yeah, but, you know, that's all anybody remembers. Yeah, you did have leprosy at one time. And then Demas, you know, you remember, you know, one thing about Demas, he quit. You know, and on it goes. And I say, here's the opposite. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, everybody remembers two things. They wouldn't eat the king's meat, and they wouldn't fall down and worship. And really, I think, if I'm only going to remember for one or two things, I probably ought to think about it. You know, but anyways, like I said, there's more in the chapter. We'll hit that. John, why don't you dismiss in prayer for us, please?